You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The known cases of coronavirus in our country has exceeded 3,600 at last check a couple hours ago, spread across 49 states. It's prompted the mass cancellation of events and changed our daily routines as we know it. Here in Wisconsin, Department of Health Services is reporting 32 active cases. Fond du Lac County is reporting the most with 11 confirmed cases. Do you think you have symptoms of COVID-19? Did you call the doctor's office? What did they advise? If you're a family physician or work in a physician's office, are you canceling non-routine visits? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Mark Thompson is SSM Health President of Medical Groups in Wisconsin. Dr. Thompson, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
How are your hospitals, how are your clinics preparing for COVID-19 right now? Are there major changes happening?
Yes. As this event has evolved, we've taken a phased approach and really caring for our patients and making sure that we have capacity to care for the ill or patients that may need to be hospitalized.
What does that look like right now? What actions are you taking?
The primary action that we've taken is making sure that we have ability to screen patients that may have symptoms or have had exposure to COVID-19. Over the last 72 hours, we've had incident commands set up through all of our communities. This weekend, we implemented a virtual visit platform to allow for online screening and created a testing center in the Madison area. For patients that required testing, we screened over 400 people on that virtual visit platform and tested approximately 30 through lab tests over the weekend. This is the strategy is in alignment with social containment and containment strategy that the public health department is focused on. We're trying to separate flows of patients that may be at risk from other vulnerable or at-risk populations that require care.
Dr. Thompson, what are these incident command centers? What happens there?
So an incident command center is essentially a structured process for planning and decision making. We work on strategy, operations, and tactical plans to deal with the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. We look at things like solutions for staffing, adjusting workflows, putting education out, and quickly ramping up what we call for surge capacity. An example is at St. Mary's Madison Hospital. We have focused on having an ICU bay with 15 beds available in the event that we do have needs for inpatient care for patients.
Are you seeing early discharges trying to free up beds and in anticipation of what could come?
Absolutely. In our, you mentioned Fond du Lac. We have one of our hospitals that we serve and work with is in Fond du Lac, and they have worked on what they call a capacity planning and have made some adjustments in elective surgeries and care.
What is the screening process like when someone is tested?
So the screening process, when we look at the virtual platform, it's a few very simple questions, a bit of personal information, like phone number and where do you live and date of birth and things like that, and then exposure to someone that may be under investigation for COVID-19 travel or a known positive case.
We're talking with Dr. Mark Thompson, who is SSM Health's President of Medical Groups in Wisconsin. We're looking at the actions taken by hospitals and physician clinics in amid the COVID-19 outbreak. With your questions paramount at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Thompson, what does this look like, this outbreak look like, coinciding with the current flu season, which also causes an uptick in hospital admissions?
Absolutely. So we, at the present time, we do have capacity in our hospitals to take care of our ill patients. And we also, during our screening process, we're trying to screen for influenza in addition to the COVID-19 virus. And we have seen some cases of influenza. We know there were a couple this weekend.
How worried are you about capacity at hospitals and what the healthcare system can bear for patients needing to be treated in the coming weeks and months?
Right. I'm as worried as our public health officials, and very much aligned with the public health strategy on social containment. We know that the vulnerable, which are described as the elderly and those with chronic medical conditions or immunosuppressions, are the ones that have complications or may succumb to COVID-19. So it's very important we protect those vulnerable patient populations and to assure that we have capacity to treat patients that need care.
We've seen Cleveland Clinic and other hospital systems around the country putting up tents outside of their ERs, outside of their emergency facilities, to basically triage before anyone enters a facility. What do you see happening there on that level?
Yes, we've taken multiple approaches in our ED to separate of flows of patient triage and care. And that process is really designed to reduce commingling of patients that are at risk or staff that may be caring and evaluating for these patients. Each of our facilities has a unique structure. In some cases, we've had to put up some awnings or tents to help with that process. Some facilities are designed where we do not have to do that, and we've put alternative workflows in place and created separate entries for some of those patients.
As you see the rise in telemedicine and calling your doctor's office and doing some of that triage over the phone, do you see a rise in call banks, or who will be staffing all of the calls coming in?
We quickly learned Friday through Sunday that we did see an influx of calls to our emergency medicine departments, our hospital operators, and our phone lines. It was absolutely critical that we had a virtual platform up in place so patients could essentially self-serve and access our screening tool through our SSMHealth.com website.
And so what does that online tool look like? What do patients navigate? What questions do they have to answer?
Sure. It's, again, very simple. It's right at the SSMHealth.com website. They type and click on virtual visit. There's a few questions about symptoms, which would be shortness of breath, a cough, and fever. A bit of a questionnaire on travel history and exposure to COVID patients. All that information is entered along with demographic information. That visit then is placed into a queue, and one of our clinicians at our urgent care facilities, which we've staffed up, is addressing that virtual visit form, and then there is an outreach via the web platform to that patient. If they meet screening criteria for lab testing, they then are directed to one of our lab testing facilities and in any of our markets that we serve.
We're talking about COVID-19 from the perspective of family medicine physicians and clinics and hospitals. Dr. Mark Thompson of SSM Health is with us. Have you recently had a doctor's appointment canceled because of COVID-19? How long ago did you schedule it? What did the office tell you about future visits? Are you a family physician or a nurse practitioner, a physician's assistant? What are you telling your patients right now? Join Through the Hour, 800-642-1234. Email questions to ideas@wpr.org. Back with Dr. Mark Thompson in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking with a family physician about COVID-19 here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What we see going on straight across the country is that businesses and schools and public health officials continue to struggle with this outbreak that has left at least 60 people dead in the country, upended nearly all aspects of public life. Have you been in contact with your doctor's office about symptoms? What did they tell you? What do you want to know about self-quarantines, about isolation, about social distancing? Join in with all your medical-related COVID-19 questions, 800-642-1234. We've got Dr. Mark Thompson with us, who is SSM Health's president of medical groups in Wisconsin. Let's take a call now. Ron is with us from Madison. Hi, Ron. What is your question?
Exactly what human oral temperature measured with a real thermometer, not a scanner, should we be concerned about? 99, 100, 101 degrees Fahrenheit.
Ron, thanks. What temperature should cause concern, Dr. Thompson?
This is always a general advice. There's multiple, you can have elevated temperature based on multiple things. The common cold, influenza, pneumonia, COVID-19. So my recommendation is anything 99 or above would be a signal to be concerned about. But we really have to look at the entire risk here. If you have any temperature at all, I would recommend that you don't go to work. You consult with your healthcare provider by phone or by our virtual visit platform, and that you understand your other risks. If you've had exposure to patients that are currently under investigation or have had travel to the sites that are listed on the CDC website, or any known exposure in the U.S.
Ron, thanks. Let's bring in Stephen now in Madison with a question. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. Yes. One thing I have not heard addressed at all, and that is people living in apartments. I mean, I live in an apartment, and I'm wondering about if somebody, you know, that I have no contact with, but lives in another apartment, is tested positive, then how does that affect me as far as quarantine goes or what have you?
Stephen, thanks. What about close living quarters, Dr. Thompson?
Absolutely. So if you look at some of the social distancing recommendations, and you know how we work in healthcare, so unless you're coming into contact within a kind of a 3-foot distance, closer than 3 feet, you know, the risk is actually fairly low. So I would not be overly concerned about living in an apartment. You might want to work with your superintendent just to make sure common areas are cleaned appropriately and routinely. That's the general recommendations.
Stephen, thanks. Let's bring in Mike now, also in Madison. Mike, hi.
Yes, good morning, doctor. You had mentioned about capacity, but you did not give a number. Is it you have one ventilator in Wisconsin, or do you have 100 ventilators available in Wisconsin? And then also in this furthering discussion, if you have a prisoner who's serving life, an 80-year-old comes in and needs a ventilator versus a retired doctor who saved 1,000 lives during their career, what is your decision-making process on who gets that ventilator?
So really, really good questions and provocative questions there. So we are working across the country in SSM Health and have the capacity to move ventilators from us from state to state with SSM Health. As you know, there are rolling metric in needs. So we have capacity to move a ventilator. So at the present time, we have enough ventilators in reserve, and I can tell you it's much more than one based on that question. We could staff and run up an ICU. The other question is, as long as we have capacity, we don't need to really make these ethical decisions at the point in time. I think there's some very good casework in Italy that people could look at in regards to ethical decision-making when there's limited resources.
Dr. Mark Thompson is with us, SSM Health's president of medical groups in Wisconsin, taking your questions on COVID-19 and the response that he is putting together in hospitals in Wisconsin. Let's go to Beth now in Stone Lake. Hi, Beth.
Hi, I'd have a question. I'm just wondering if we're only testing people with possible exposure to people that have coronavirus, aren't we possibly missing community spread of the virus?
I will say when you look at the CDC guidelines, there is physician or nurse practitioner or PA discretion in those that are tested. So we always have the ability to make the judgment on the front line based on what's happening and evolving in the community. And judgment of community spread is taken into consideration when we are testing.
Beth, thank you so much. We have a comment here. Richard from West Allis called in, couldn't stay with us. Richard is 88, has a doctor's appointment coming up, and is wondering if Richard should cancel due to risk. And if Richard does cancel, can he still renew his prescriptions?
Richard, what I would say is contact your physician or nurse practitioner or physician assistant, either by phone or through the electronic medical record, and I am sure with a conversation you can have your prescription renewed without having to come in.
Let's go to Stephen now in Eau Claire. Hi, Stephen. Oh, Stephen is not there. Dr. Thompson, this is an evolving situation. Everything changes moment to moment, day to day. What is your top priority today when we leave this conversation? What are you working on?
As you said, it's constantly evolving. So we've been really working on to make sure we have the workforce needed to take care of all of our patients, not just COVID-19 patients. We are in a stewardship of healthcare for our communities. We're also, as the social distancing and community health policies have been put into place, really adjusting our strategy and who you're seeing and when we are seeing them. So that will be the next 24 to 48 hours of work at SSM Health.
Are you concerned that your workforce may be impacted as parents are home watching their kids? They may not be able to get to work because the kids are home.
Yes, we are always concerned with that. But it's just like any other snow day, any other concern or incident that we're responding to. One thing about our healthcare workers and our support staff, people show up, they lean in, and in difficult times, I've just seen wonderful people come together, and that's what I've seen so far at SSM Health.
Some insurance companies have said that they will waive copays and coinsurance, even deductibles related to COVID-19 testing. How are you working with insurance companies right now? How have they responded?
Everyone is leaning in at the moment. Our own Dean Health Plan with SSM Health. We are currently, SSM Health is offering the COVID-19 screening versus our virtual platform as a free service. So there is no payment for COVID-19 screening via the virtual platform.
What can medical staff, healthcare workers do to protect themselves from patients who may have COVID-19?
So really following our screening processes are in place, following the CDC guidelines, using the proper protective equipment that we have available is the main thing that we can do.
Help us understand the differences between self-quarantine, isolation, and social distancing.
So quarantine, isolation would be I have a fever. I'm not sure where I may have gotten this from. Maybe I'm not getting tested. I'm going to put myself and distance myself for a couple weeks is essentially the isolation. Quarantine is a process where we have significant risk. We've told someone to go to their home, not circulate in the public. We monitor their symptoms and wait for their test results to come back if they've been screened through laboratory testing. Social distancing is really trying to limit people congregating, limiting unnecessary travel, and not gathering in large groups. It's a great time for social media and connecting with FaceTime. I recognize there's a lot of anxiety out there, and people generally want to come together and support each other. It's a good time to reach out and call someone or FaceTime with someone.
And not go face-to-face in a restaurant, per se.
Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Thompson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Mark Thompson is SSM Health President of Medical Groups in Wisconsin. And for disclosure, SSM Health is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, we have Dr. Bruce Barrett as we spend the hour on COVID-19 and how the medical community is responding. Do you work at a hospital? Are you doing early discharges to prepare your units for a barrage of COVID-19 patients? Do you have enough supplies on hand? What are you lacking? How high are flu cases right now? Join in throughout the hour, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get to more of your questions right after this news update here on the Ideas Network.
COVID.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. Vice President Mike Pence says more Americans will have access to coronavirus testing in the coming days with the rollout of a new private-public partnership. NPR's Allison Aubrey reports.
The head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, Anthony Fauci, says the U.S. is moving into a new phase of testing. In addition to state health labs, commercial high-speed testing is being rolled out, making it possible to do thousands of tests. Officials say priority will be given to healthcare providers and older Americans at higher risk. So far, there are about 3,000 documented cases of coronavirus in the U.S., though this case count is expected to go up as testing increases. Fauci advises that Americans hunker down to prevent the spread of this contagious virus. Allison Aubrey, NPR News, Washington.
Southeast Asian nations have reported a sharp uptick in coronavirus cases over the weekend. Michael Sullivan reports from Thailand.
The biggest jump over the weekend was in Malaysia. 125 new cases reported today, linked to a religious event last week. Thailand reported more than 60 over the weekend, some local transmission, some not. Vietnam is dealing with a new cluster connected to an infected woman who returned earlier this month from London. Europe now the epicenter of the virus.
Michael Sullivan reporting. Wall Street, another plunge expected. The Dow down sharply. This is NPR.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio News at 8:31. I'm Melissa Ingalls. Many Wisconsin school districts have already closed in an effort to curb the spread of the new coronavirus. Others have until 5 p.m. Wednesday under a mandate from Governor Tony Evers. The move has left some parents figuring out what they're going to do for childcare. Others say they're waiting to find out if their kids will have to make up missed classroom time this summer. Brian Morstad is an assistant principal at an elementary school in Shawano. He says the district is also concerned about the food security of its students.
It's one of the things we're working on is how to get meals to kids who might not either have them or their parents might not be able to provide adequate ones.
Officials announced Sunday that all Dane County schools would close immediately. Madison Metropolitan School District staff said breakfast and lunch will be available for students who need it at designated meal drop sites. Agencies around the state are taking steps to ensure seniors will have access to food as measures ramp up to slow the spread of the new coronavirus. Fresh Meals on Wheels of Sheboygan County will begin delivering bulk meals to many of its clients. Megan Hart has the details.
Kelly Anderson is CEO of Fresh Meals. She says the organization has stepped up production. It's flash freezing meals to allow for less frequent deliveries.
Instead of making, say, 300 meals a day, we're trying to make a couple thousand meals a day. So our grocery bills are through the roof. What this does to cash flow is just traumatic, but it has to happen.
She says volunteers will check in with clients by phone instead of in-person visits. Fresh Meals will also begin taking the temperature of volunteers starting Monday. Milwaukee County's Department on Aging has begun ordering extra frozen and shelf-stable meals. It delivers food to about 1,400 homebound people. Its congregate dining sites were open Friday, but the agency says it could switch to a drive-through model. Megan Hart, Wisconsin Public Radio.
With no plans at this time to postpone Wisconsin's April 7th primary, Milwaukee officials are urging voters to consider their options. Early voting begins today. Registered voters can also request an absentee ballot online. Neil Albrecht heads the Milwaukee Election Commission. He says during the 2016 presidential election, about 10,000 people in Milwaukee voted by absentee ballot. Albrecht says there have been 12,000 requests so far, with 1,000 more requests per day in the city. This is WPR.
It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The COVID-19 outbreak has prompted the declaration of a national emergency as communities take steps to limit the spread and to identify and treat those who've contracted it. Here at Wisconsin Public Radio, we'll continue to bring you updates, state, national, international, with additional coverage from NPR and the BBC. You can also find the latest news and related stories at WPR.org/COVID. Right now, we're talking about how family medicine physicians are handling COVID-19 with patient questions about testing, symptoms, and how to stay well. Have you called your doctor's office about COVID-19? What did you ask? What did they tell you? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Dr. Bruce Barrett is a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He is vice chair for research, and he developed the Wisconsin Upper Respiratory Symptoms Survey. He's practiced family medicine in Verona for 20 years. Dr. Barrett, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Happy to be here.
So the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that from 2018 to 2019, about 25 million people in the U.S. were sick with flu. About 34,000 people died. How would you compare what you're seeing right now with COVID-19 with the spread of the flu?
Well, so far, we haven't seen those numbers, but unfortunately, we will be seeing larger numbers, we think.
What do you see with those numbers, with those projections, and, you know, what numbers are looking like right now?
So we're just at the very beginning of this epidemic. It's not entirely predictable. Some coronaviruses tend to go away in the summer, so some of us were overly hopeful, hoping that there will be some reduction with weather in the summer. If we do the right thing and reduce the spread, everybody makes good choices and behaviors, and we can slow the spread and not overwhelm the system, then we'll probably have a longer epidemic, but maybe with fewer people affected or dying from it.
So that's what public health officials say when you talk about flattening the curve, like having a longer but sustained response that you can actually respond to.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Our hope is that we don't overwhelm the system. We don't have a lot to offer patients other than oxygen and intubation for those who are most severely ill. Pretty much everyone else, the medical healthcare system doesn't really have much to offer. So we're actually asking people who do get sick with it to not touch anybody else, not sneeze or cough into air that anybody else breathes, but basically to self-isolate and to not run to their doctor because their doctor doesn't have much for them, unless they're high risk or developing bad pneumonia.
What changes has UW Health made to prepare for COVID-19?
So UW Health is very rapidly developing new systems and has been for the last week or two. There's daily calls. I was on one yesterday with, dozens of the family docs in my department. And constant improving systems, but a lot of it we don't know because this really is unprecedented. But some of the big take-home points are we're trying to keep everybody with respiratory symptoms out of the clinics because there are other people there who are more susceptible. For those who actually meet testing criteria, there's going to be some setup places where people can go that will have precautions in place so that the infection won't, transmit. Another big take-home point that I would like to make is that you as an individual don't really get much gain from being tested. The information that we use to make decisions as a society is crucial, so the testing as it rolls out will be helpful. But once you're infected, the main thing you can do is not infect other people. So the run on testing, I would like to tamp down a little bit too, because it doesn't really give us any information about how to treat you.
So you shouldn't run out and try to be tested or find a place that can do testing.
I don't think so. No. Except for the people who need to continue their work to help others, and we really need to make sure that they're not infected, and if they are, we have to have special quarantine procedures, isolation procedures. So for some classes of individuals, early testing does make sense, but for the average person in Wisconsin, not so much.
How exposed right now are hospital workers, healthcare workers? How concerned are you?
At this point, we're just at the beginning of the epidemic, so luckily we're putting procedures into place right now. So the exposure at this point is not terrible, but it will be.
We're talking with Dr. Bruce Barrett. He is a professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health in Family Medicine. You can join in with your questions about COVID-19, 800-642-1234. Are you someone who believes you may have symptoms? Have you called your family doctor about concerns surrounding coronavirus? What did you ask? What did they tell you? What do you want clarity on about this disease? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in George now in Ashland with a question. Hi, George.
Good morning. I don't have any symptoms, so I'm not a person who's subject to this disease right now, but I'd like to hear some good sound advice for people about taking care of themselves or family members at home once they have this disease and are not sufficiently compromised and need to go to be in a hospital yet. I just haven't heard anyone talking about how to take care of somebody at home and what to do for yourself in terms of nutrition, medication, hydration, keeping cool. What's the advice? Is it the same as ordinary flu advice? And if that's the case, let's hear it.
George, thank you. Great question. Dr. Barrett?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question. So we need to be taking care of each other. That's how we stay healthy and happy and move forward. People need to eat. People need clean water. So family members usually are the people who do those services. The only way that a virus can go from one person to another is really three possibilities. One is a hand-to-hand contact. What you touch your nose, you touch somebody's hand, they touch their nose, it goes in. The other is coughing or sneezing into the air, and the number of viral particles is much higher, closer to the person who coughs or sneezes. Once you're 3, 4, 5, 6 feet away, very unlikely to get that in you. And then the third one is touching inanimate objects, doorknobs or utensils and so on. Which is usually the very least. It still happens, so we need to have hygiene on hard surfaces. But the first one is the biggest one. So when you're taking care of other people who are known to be infected, you want to avoid nose-to-nose, hand-to-nose, hand-to-hand, coughing and sneezing exposures, and to have the person who's not sick doing the hygiene and the cleaning and the cooking and the washing. Still, you'll be at high risk, and the maximum infectivity occurs just before symptoms occur and then continues for a few days. So you often don't know that you're infectious for up to a day or two while you are spreading viruses. So just meticulous hygiene is really the key here, and helping each other.
Do we know how Tylenol or ibuprofen or other over-the-counter medications may help in reducing fevers for COVID-19? What do we know there?
Yeah, so I always recommend acetaminophen, which is sold as Tylenol and other brands, for pain, and headache and body pains can easily be part of this syndrome as in usual flu. And that's the reason I recommend that rather than the non-steroidals such as ibuprofen and aspirin, and is that those can have a higher side effect profile. So Reducing the fever doesn't reduce the infectivity, and it doesn't reduce the course of the disease. It doesn't keep you out of the hospital or protect your lungs or anything. All it does is help with the symptoms. So, you know, to the extent that Tylenol is helpful to you with your symptoms, sure.
What about fluids?
Yeah, people should always stay well hydrated, and we know that especially with older people, absolute and relative dehydration is bad, so everyone should be, and that's just normal health advice. Drink lots of fluid, 6, 8, 10 cups of something a day.
Let's bring in Denise now in Hudson. Hi, Denise.
Hello.
Hi there. What's your question?
Yes, my question has to do with I was at the grocery store, and as I was picking out vegetables and fruits, I noticed other shoppers, of course, handling the vegetables and fruits, and I like to lightly steam my broccoli and other vegetables. The people putting it out had gloves on, but not the shoppers. Do I need to be worried about the fresh produce and vegetables getting virus on it and taking it home?
Not so much. It is possible because the viral particles can remain infectious for hours, many hours, but there aren't so many of them. So if somebody touches something and then you touch it, the chance of you getting the bug is way less than you touching their hand. But yes, it's possible that somebody who picks up an apple and rolls it around in their hands and then sets it back down, and then you come and take that apple and you rub it against your nose. It's possible, but it's not going to be a major route of infection.
So how helpful is it at the grocery store where you see employees using gloves as they handle the deli meats and cheeses and other produce?
I think that's good practice. And there's lots of other infectious disease other than this coronavirus right now. So I think those are good practices. You know, food hygiene has been one of the major improvements in public health the last century. So it's good practice. And if you want to wear gloves when you go shopping, nothing wrong with that.
Dr. Bruce Barrett is a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's our guide right now to COVID-19 and when to call a family doc about symptoms. Have you stocked up on hand sanitizer or soap? Do you have a digital thermometer that you know how to use? What questions do you have about Tylenol and ibuprofen, other meds for pain and fever? Still time for you at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. At present, there is no vaccine to combat COVID-19, nor any approved drugs to slow the course of its toll on the human body. And biologically, we're learning it behaves differently than the seasonal flu. Still time for your questions about COVID-19, 800-642-1234. Dr. Bruce Barrett is a family medicine physician and professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and he stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now with Mark joining us from Kimberly. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
What's your question?
How do you distinguish between common cold, upper respiratory infection, sore throat, and nasal congestion, in the last 3 to 10 days? How do you distinguish that from COVID?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. So common cold is a syndrome, and it can be caused by any of the viruses. Influenza can cause a common cold syndrome, and this COVID-19 can cause a common cold syndrome. In general, the symptoms are more severe with influenza, and they're even more severe with the new novel coronavirus. So at this point, if you've had symptoms for a week or two, it's extremely unlikely to be the COVID-19. But in a month from now, if we're in the midst of an epidemic and you have symptoms, whether they're mild or severe, they're going to be a lot more likely due to it. So I wish there was a way to look at symptoms and tell people what they have, but there just plain isn't. The odds change a little bit with more severe symptoms, but it's not diagnostic.
Mark, thanks. Let's bring in Kenneth now in Janesville with a question. Hi, Kenneth.
What do you have to say about how long it's going to take us to get through this as an epidemiologist?
Yeah, so thanks for that question. The answer is we don't know, but we do have 200 years of historical information on how epidemics go, and especially how respiratory epidemics go, and they always go away eventually. It might become endemic, meaning that the bug might stay in the population going around, but at much lower level. They go away once enough people have been exposed and survived and have good antibodies against it. And there's other reasons. Some people are just more susceptible. Some people are naturally more resistant. People's behaviors change. So I wish I could tell you this is all going to be gone in 2 months from now or 4 or 6. But we just don't know at this point.
Can history inform us in any way? When polio struck kids in their prime in the 40s and 50s, or dengue fever spread from mosquitoes, or Ebola, how should we look at COVID-19 through how we've approached other health outbreaks, other health challenges in history?
Yeah, so we've learned lots. One of the silver linings here is that people are going to have more interest in epidemiology and public health, and we'll all be working more towards effective response. But unfortunately, this particular virus is kind of in a sweet spot, or actually a sour spot, where it can transmit fairly rapidly without showing itself. So with some diseases, you immediately know what the person has because they have a characteristic rash, and we can isolate them. Or with Ebola, it was so hazardous that people would get very, very sick very, very quickly, and we could isolate them. This one, you're going to be spreading it before you know you have it, and most of the people will have mild common cold-like symptoms. But for some people, especially the older people who have chronic disease and immune deficiency, are high risk. 1 out of 100, maybe 2 out of 100, who in that category will die. So what we've learned is very, very helpful, but it doesn't tell us exactly how this epidemic will go.
Let's bring in Nancy now in Verona. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
What is your question?
My question is, as a grandparent who is 70 years old, healthy, with no special conditions, how cautious do I need to be about being around my grandchildren when they have, a fever, cough, that sort of thing right now?
Yeah, so that's a really good and really hard question, because the importance of family ties and, taking care of each other and feeling loved, all of that is hugely important with health. We know that, mental and physical health. But we also know that you are at higher risk because of your age. At this point, we think we know that kids are going to be major vectors of this, meaning they'll carry it and sometimes won't even know they have it. That data is changing daily, but it looks like they are indeed infectable and will be the transmitters to people who are at more risk. So I think you need to be really careful. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't communicate with them. In fact, there's lots of wonderful ways to communicate with and reassure each other and express love without physical contact. And I'd probably advise you in that direction.
Nancy, thanks. We're talking with Dr. Bruce Barrett, a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Taking your questions on COVID-19, let's bring in Marty now in Elkhorn. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. So there's 66 deaths across North America contributed to coronavirus. Divide that by 50 states. That comes to 1.32 people or something to that effect. And we have this big outpouring of, oh, my God, it's a pandemic. How many people die from the flu? I recently heard 30% of people that have been tested positive for this don't show any symptoms at all.
Marty, thanks for the call. Dr. Barrett, is this overblown?
I would hope to say it is, but it really isn't. And that's, we know that because of what has happened in other countries. We know that from what's happening in Italy, and the areas of China that were first affected. So at this point, indeed, it looks like it is a tiny blip compared to the flu season, which has killed over 30,000 people. But we've seen what's happened in the rest of the world. We've measured the characteristics of this virus. And I'm afraid this is going to be a very bad epidemic. I'm hoping not too bad. I'm hoping maybe twice as bad as the annual flu epidemic. A lot of people are saying 10 times as bad.
You study respiratory symptoms. How vulnerable are our lungs to things like COVID-19?
Well, that's the way people die from this one. It does cause pneumonia and sometimes bad pneumonia that can't be people can't even be kept alive with oxygen. So, but the vast majority of people will get through it just fine. It's a relatively small number of people who will end up with pneumonia, and of those who end up with pneumonia, most will survive. But some won't, and the resilience, the general health you have going into it is a major predictor.
Cole from Sun Prairie called in, couldn't stay with us. Cole says, due to the number one symptom being fever, everyone should be doing daily temperature checks of themselves and the people they are with. What do you think about regular temperature checks?
Well, fever is a major harbinger. I mean, it tells us that you're getting infected. Almost all fevers are caused by infection. Some percentage, we don't know yet exactly what that will be, of people who get infected will not have fevers, probably the majority, but we don't really know that yet. So should everybody be checking their temperature every day? Yeah, maybe, but you can also self-surveil. You can be feeling, do you feel sick today? Do you have a sore throat? Are you beginning to cough? Do you feel malaise and tiredness? So fever is not the only symptom. I'm not sure we need to all be checking our temperature all the time, but it is an important sign of illness.
Dr. Barrett, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Bruce Barrett is a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. By the way, UW Health runs a free public COVID-19 hotline. That number is 608-720-5300. Again, that's 608-720-5300. And earlier, we talked with the president of SSM Health Medical Groups in Wisconsin, Dr. Mark Thompson. Just ahead, it's On Point, what widespread school closures mean for students and their families. Colleges are moving learning online. Campuses are closed. Elementary school students are at home with parents trying to work. We take a look at the impact of COVID-19 on our education system. That's On Point coming up next. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.